2020 election. The House, the Senate, the presidency.
Our around-the-clock coverage continues.
You're listening to POTUS, Sirius XM 124.
Welcome back to our coverage on this Saturday morning. I'm Brian Ross. Be sure to call in and weigh in on what you're hearing, what you're thinking, what your reaction to our guests at 866-967-6887. As you go about your business on a Saturday morning, a lot going on still. We could get some new vote counts in the next couple hours from some of the key states that are still hanging in the wind there. We haven't heard yet if there's any indication of anybody calling this election. We sort of see the growing trends in Pennsylvania with its 20 votes that could make a difference. But keeping the networks from calling some of this are the some of the legal challenges that potentially, in a very slim chance, but potentially could change everything. So let's talk about that with Professor Ken Catlin, law professor at Northern Kentucky University, teaching and writing in the areas of constitutional law and communications law. And Professor Catlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
What do you make so far of the Trump campaign legal strategy? They're throwing a lot against the wall, not much is sticking.
Yeah. I think that's mostly what we're going to see. They may win one or two of these cases, but the cases are not going to affect enough. The number of votes that will be affected by it are not going to be enough to change the outcome.
What should they be doing, if anything, here? What's a smarter strategy?
I think conceding would be the smarter strategy. But all they can really do is look for the any rules in any states where there may have been some lack of clarity in the rule and try to get a resolution that'll decide the rule in their favor. And that's what they're doing. And I think, you know, as I said, they may succeed in Pennsylvania in getting a ruling that the votes that are received later than Election Day can't be counted. They may succeed in some of the other lawsuits about authentication of provisional ballots and things like that. But in all of these cases, we're talking about very small numbers of votes that would be affected, and I don't think any of those could change the outcome. They're also pursuing recounts in Wisconsin and Georgia. And in Georgia, a recount could change the outcome because it's so close. But that's, I think that wouldn't change the outcome of the overall election.
You know, the president is tweeting this morning, bad things happened inside, big changes took place, no evidence at all substantiate that, and a tweet allegation is hardly proof, is it? Yet he's sending his lawyers into court to argue those issues without any proof, and the judges that I've seen so far in Michigan and Georgia just throw them out and say it's all hearsay. Come back to us when you've got some proof.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the fraud claims are the claims that could potentially affect enough votes to change outcomes, but there's no merit to them. They're going nowhere.
And is that considered a frivolous effort then? Can the court take actions against lawyers bringing cases that are just so frivolous?
Yeah, I don't think the court will because of the politics of the situation. But there, if the cases are brought in federal court, there's a rule of civil procedure called Rule 11 that would allow the federal judges to sanction lawyers for bringing frivolous cases, and cases that are based on evidentiary claims that there's no evidence for are frivolous cases. In all the state cases, it would depend on the rules of the state court.
And as they go through, we talked a little bit, and you mentioned the case in Pennsylvania where Justice Samuel Alito issued an order that they should keep separate the ballots that came in, I guess, after Election Day, but did not stop them from counting them. What's the impact of that, do you think? Is that a suggestion that the Supreme Court might look favorably on some of his claims?
Yes. I think that if the number of claims, if the number of votes we're talking about here could affect the outcome in Pennsylvania, then I think the court would, in fact, take the case and rule in favor of President Trump. But I think if the number of votes that we're talking about wouldn't affect the outcome in Pennsylvania, then in the end, I think the court will say that that case is moot and they won't take it. And so that's the significance of it.
With this, the narrow leads, as we mentioned, in Georgia and really in Arizona, the lead for Mr. Biden is shrinking there somewhat, although it's kind of stabilized overnight. And, you know, these are total of the four states. It's 88,000 votes separates a winner from loser so far. Could we see a massive recount, almost a Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona, which would slow things down incredibly?
Well, the recount law of each state is different. And so there's different thresholds. Some states will allow it only if the votes come within 0.1% of each other. Some it could be up to 0.5%. A massive recount effort would slow things down probably by a week or two, but I don't know that that really matters. The Electoral College doesn't actually vote until December 14th, and with the exception of Georgia, which is so close, I don't think in any of the others there's any real chance that a recount could change the outcome.
The president, apparently, according to the Associated Press, plans to go play golf today. He doesn't seem to be bothered too much by it. How are you, your friends and people following this? Has it been anxiety-ridden, or have you sort of accepted this is how it's going to be?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of anxiety among Democrats until maybe yesterday, but I think it became so clear by yesterday the way the votes are going that they're out of reach for President Trump through any of these strategies that I think a lot of the anxiety started to roll over.
You remember in 2000 when the Gore-Bush face-off came down to a few hundred votes in Florida, and the campaign read by the Bush campaign had James Baker, a former Secretary of State and Treasury Secretary and esteemed leader of the Republican Party. Here it seems like it's either going to be Rudy Giuliani or Corey Lewandowski or David Bossie, who are hardly in the same category.
Yeah, he's bringing all the best people. Huh? That's really the Z team, I think. And it's one of the reasons I think they're so willing to just bring meritless claims, even along with some of the claims that may have some merit.
And of the possible claims that could have merit, just looking on the other side here for a moment, they've claimed that they weren't allowed to observe the counting. It came down to, well, where are you going to stand kind of issues. But does that have any basis? Is there something they could build on from that?
Well, they won one of those cases in Pennsylvania, but all that they won was the right, they were allowed to stand 10 feet away, and they won the right to stand 6 feet away. But that doesn't affect how any votes will actually turn out. And also remember, when they talk about not being able to observe, it's a very spurious claim because the poll workers themselves who are counting the votes, they count them in pairs, one Democrat, one Republican. So Republicans are part of the process of counting votes, and those Republicans are not only observing, but they're actually doing the counting. And also, all the parties are allowed to credential small numbers of credentialed observers who can be right there, not even 6 feet away. So we're really only talking about members of the general public who want to observe here. But the parties have a formal role in the process. The Republicans are right; they are part of that process of counting votes.
Right, and the president falsely claiming today in one of his tweets that hundreds of thousands of votes were illegally not allowed to be observed, all caps observed, is how he put it. Just nothing to back that up.
There's nothing to back that up.
Yeah. We're talking with Professor Ken Keck, and a professor of law at Northern Kentucky University. Kentucky went for the president.
Yep.
No surprise?
No surprise, and really no surprise that Mitch McConnell was reelected in Kentucky either.
And as overall, from what we've seen, it looks like a pretty clean election, doesn't it? And given what we've seen in the past, it seems like a pretty clean election.
Nationwide? Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to know. And, if anything, the only things that I've seen that I would think might indicate some irregularities all go in the other direction. And it's in South Texas, some counties swung by 50 points from the 2016 election to this election towards the Republicans. And although that itself is not evidence of irregularity, it seems strange. But I haven't seen any evidence of irregularities anywhere. I'm sure there were a few in the country, as there always are, but it could never really add up to enough votes being affected by them to affect the outcomes.
Well, I grew up in the Chicago area, and we certainly knew about the Richard J. Daley machine in Chicago, Cook County, where they vote early, vote often. The west side of Chicago was people were going out and rounding up people on Skid Row, and they were asked to vote several different times. So it's it has happened in the past, and I guess they're alleging that Philadelphia is guilty of the same thing now, although I don't think there's any proof of that currently.
No.
What has changed about our elections that makes them cleaner than they once might have been?
Well, I think big data plays a big role in that. It's actually easy. It's easy to check on those kind of allegations, right? So the data about who's registered and who actually voted is pretty easily accessible. And so if somebody wants to make a claim that a dead person voted, Well, they can find out, you know, who voted, and they can find out if that person is dead. And I think the parties not only have access to big data, but they have a lot more resources to bring to bear to actually follow up on those kind of investigations. So I think those are the main safeguards that have made elections cleaner.
Do you think part of the strategy here by the Trump campaign is just to drag it out, to kind of create a furor here, or just sort of continue to say false things often enough people start to believe them? It also perhaps helps prevent the networks from making a call if things are hanging in the balance.
Yeah, I think that was part of his strategy, and I think that strategy started even before the election. I think when President Trump realized that Democrats being more concerned about COVID generally than Republicans, Democrats were going to vote by mail in significantly larger numbers. I think as soon as he realized that, he formulated a strategy of trying to encourage Republicans to vote on Election Day and understanding what's sometimes called the red mirage, that would mean that on Election Day, the Election Day returns would look much more like the Republicans were ahead because it would take longer to count the mail-in votes. And then he would that would set up this political argument that the election is being stolen as all these extra votes come in. So I think he did have that as a political strategy all along, and he's trying to execute it. But I don't think he really ever had a legal strategy for how he would execute that, because there's nothing illegal about voting by mail or about vote by mail votes being counted after the in-person votes were counted.
And Professor Kacken, let me ask you this. Should any of these cases make their way somehow to the Supreme Court, what's your concern there about the balance of that court and how political they might be?
Yeah, I do believe it's a partisan court, and that every ruling that they can make will favor President Trump because they're a partisan court. However, the only kind of rulings that they can really make are things about if there are laws where there's a lack of clarity about the law. I think all of those kind of rulings are going to go in favor of President Trump. But if it's an evidentiary question, like whether there was a fraud, which has to be proved by evidence, the Supreme Court's not going to get into that. So I think, you know, when we're talking about questions like can votes in Pennsylvania be counted if they come in after Election Day, I think the only criteria the court will use to decide that question is which ruling would benefit President Trump. And I think they will do that because they are a partisan court. But I just don't think there's enough actual disputes about what the rules are that could really affect the outcome.
And has their position been essentially, well, we should leave it up to the states? We can't impose our will on the states?
That's what the law actually should say. I don't think they will say that. I think the U.S. Supreme Court will say, I think they'll throw their weight around to the maximum extent that they can if there are any contested rules, even if these rules are purely rules of state law, which should be left to the states, such as the rule about whether Pennsylvania can count votes that come in after the election. I don't think they'll leave it to the states. I think they'll reach out and they'll decide those rulings in favor of President Trump. But they may choose to stay out of the case only because all those kinds of interventions could not affect enough votes to actually help President Trump win these states at issue.
And is it your sense they'd like to stay out of this?
No.
At least Chief Justice Roberts would? You think they want to get into it?
Yeah, I agree with you that Chief Justice Roberts would like to stay out of it, but I think he doesn't have a majority anymore. And with Justice Barrett on the court, I think there's five justices that would like to get into it and would like to hand a victory to Trump. But I think they just don't have a way to do it.
I'm curious you say that. So is there sort of a shadow Chief Justice now? Who's the leader of the conservative bloc?
That's a great question. I don't know that a leader has emerged yet. I guess Justice Thomas is the most senior in that block, but he also has tended to be the most idiosyncratic on the court, which would maybe make him not the leader. Perhaps it would be Justice Gorsuch or Justice Kavanaugh that would emerge as the leader. I'm really not sure about a leader, but I am sure that there's those five justices are extremely partisan in their outlook.
And you think they would like to grab a case, and the Pennsylvania case is before them, right? At least with...
Yeah, I'm sure they would grab it if it could flip Pennsylvania. I think the only thing that might stop them from grabbing it is that I don't think there's enough votes there to flip Pennsylvania.
Would they want to do it anyway, just to make a point? Or
I don't think so. You know, that's a hard one to predict, but I think that they... I think they don't want to be perceived as a partisan court, and so making partisan gestures that are useless, I don't think is really serving their interest. I think they'd rather be perceived as a less partisan court, and therefore they would only show their partisan cards in cases where they really have to.
So the allegation suggests that any fraud, any wrongdoing, any errors are all in favor of Joe Biden. Nothing that would hurt his case at all, I guess.
Yeah, and the fraud type allegations, which are really would require evidence, that's the kind of thing I don't think the Supreme Court would jump in on. It's just really not within their bailiwick to reweigh evidence or to gin up evidence. I think the kind of issue they could weigh in on is to clarify what certain rules are, but not to really find facts.
And the recount aspects of certain states, they've asked for it in Wisconsin. Georgia already has said there will be one. Other states could do. Senator Cruz is asking for a redo in Pennsylvania. A recount could potentially, if it's the right state, change everything, right?
Well, potentially, but it's going to probably have to be more than one state. You know, for instance, if the recount in Georgia changes the outcome in Georgia, that's not going to change the outcome of the nationwide election.
Right.
So you'd have to have several recounts for it to change everything. And I don't think any state other than Georgia is close enough where that's even a prospect.
All right. Professor Ken Katkin from Northern Kentucky University, we appreciate it very much. Great hearing from you and insight into the law and the legal strategy by the Trump campaign not working so far. All right. Well, that's hour one. I'll keep it here for continued coverage of the 2020 election. A lot's going to happen in the next couple hours. We thank you for being along with us today. I'm Brian Ross, and today with you on SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124.
Stay here for the latest news on the 2020 election.
This is your preset for politics, SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124.